Sports Talk Daily with Andrew Hustler Patterson and Michael Remus.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome to a Wednesday hump day edition on week one of Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily. Andrew Patterson with you. We'll bring in Michael Remus in a minute, and holy smokes, do we have a packed show. It takes a lot to get a big win, like last night's Jets victory to kick off their three-game series against the Toronto Maple Leafs, off the top line of the docket. But the news regarding the CFL-XFL discussions and what that means, I think, is captivating sports fans, certainly here in Winnipeg and around the country. Lucky for us, we've got time to do both. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us coming up in about 10 minutes. And then at the bottom of the hour, 1:30, live on YouTube, if you're with us in the chat right now, Dave Naylor, who broke the news earlier today on these discussions that are taking place between the CFL and the XFL and what that means. It is the Players' Championship tee off tomorrow with TPC Sawgrass. 10-2, Ryan Hart, Winnipeg native, tournament director for the PGA Tour's biggest event of the year, and the guy that will be in charge of putting on the President's Cup in Montreal in a few years will join us as well. But with all of that, we, of course, thank our sponsors, Knott Auto Corp, Boston Pizza Winnipeg, Royal Sports, and the Nick and Nikki DQ Group. We'll touch on what they're doing a little bit later on. But right now, let's get right to it. Bring in Michael Remus to begin the program with so much to talk about. Remo, as I said, just in the open, kind of pretty sure we were going to spend 90% of today's show talking about the Winnipeg Jets and that big win last night in Toronto. But before we get to that, this bombshell from Dave Naylor today has a lot of people wondering what this means for the future of the Canadian Football League, the future of three-down football, and from a short-term perspective, what this means for a hopeful 2021 CFL season.
Yeah, it was very, very, you know, shocking to see the tweet from Dave Naylor. You're kind of like, whoa, what's going on here? The CFL and the XFL? From what I read from the report, it just seems like they're engaging in discussions. They're trying to collaborate. Can they help each other to further their own business? We know CFL didn't have a season last year. I know their financial situation, as we've heard from Randy Ambrosi, isn't great. Is this something where they can work together and where one head is better than two? We know XFL has The Rock, who's come on as a partner in it. And you know, anything The Rock is probably going to be, you know, widely covered by the media, widely successful. So I'm kind of taking a wait-and-see approach before I react. But I think anything that brings more attention to the CFL is good. But what does it mean for the rules or three-down football or the wide field? You know, anything. I don't think you can really say, but maybe Dave can shed some light on things at 1:30.
Absolutely. So here was the initial tweet from Nails about 3 hours ago. The CFL and XFL about to announce entering formal talks to explore opportunities. Yes, this is big news. Follow that up with an XFL announcement that the league has hit pause on its plans for the 2022 season, pending results of its formal talk with the CFL. Of course, the XFL would be playing right now. Their schedule before having to shut down due to the pandemic was a season starting pretty much right after the Super Bowl. Now, he said a bunch more. There will be loads of speculation about what this means for the CFL. Is this about XFL and CFL teams play each other? My gut tells me it is. Then there are two big questions. When is the schedule and what are the rules? Follows it up with, if you put me on the spot and asked, will we see XFL and CFL teams playing each other as soon as 2022? My answer is yes. And that is just the speculation of someone who's seen it all. I mean, this comes down to a couple things. The Canadian Football League, with its 100 years of history, has survived. There's been some very, very tough times. They've been bailed out at times before. But the global pandemic and what everyone is dealing with right now is a whole nother ballgame, I think, from anything that we've seen. I mean, teams have been in trouble before. But, I mean, now we've heard that, you know, the red ink in the community-owned teams, which overall have been the most successful CFL teams, are in really bad spots. What does this mean for the private teams? And, of course, they didn't have a season last year because there wasn't the money to do it. So, I mean, finances are a big part of it. To me, this is really, I think, something that's more about survival for the Canadian Football League. So looking forward to talking about that with Dave. 1:30 if you're watching with us live on YouTube right now, Dave will come up with that. And then in just a couple minutes, we'll bring in Mike McIntyre. And of course, Reem will be talking about that big win last night. You know, I went on the lock shop yesterday. We took the Jets off the suspended list. And if you're wondering about that, you know, it was a I backed them publicly the first time I went and got my home team out on the lock shop as a winner against Vancouver in that ugly Saturday night game earlier in February. And I said, even though I probably would be putting some sprinkles on the Jets, I was not putting them out for any more picks. They were on the suspended list. Well, they came off the start of March. I was waiting for the spot to get the Jets at. We mentioned the odds, especially against a team like Toronto. There was going to be value on the Winnipeg Jets. And listen, this was a game where Toronto carried the play. Certainly, I'd say for the majority of times, they had way more high-danger scoring chances. But Connor Hellebuck, Mason Appleton talked about it after the game, Reem. When a guy like that gets pulled and has a game like he does on Saturday, you know exactly what you're going to get coming in the next game. And what we got was Vezina-level goaltending, which helped the Jets get a huge 2 points and a regulation win in the first of three in Toronto against the first-place Leafs.
Yeah, Connor Hellebuck, I mean, he's unbelievable. If he can see the puck, he should be able to stop it. Yeah, I just the one save that sticks out to me is that pad save on Marner, all in front.
Oh, is that good?
I mean, you need those type of saves. I know we've said this all year, but that was the win that we've seen the Jets have this whole season. I mean, they get outshot. Hellebuck makes some amazing saves, and they are elite scorers. Pick up some big goals. Nikolaj Ehlers, I mean, his play behind the net, that pass to Kyle Connor, going around, stopping, and finding Connor, that is an elite pass. Neil Pionk, you know, no one's talking about him, not even getting first power play minutes. 3 points yesterday.
I'm talking about him not getting first power play minutes.
Yeah.
Neil Pionk has been, there's a number of guys that have stepped up, and Mason Appleton is one of them. Yeah. But Pionk, you know, sort of quietly going about his business with a 3-point night. Man, he makes things happen. And, you know, while Josh Morrissey, it was great to see Josh, you know, get a little assist from the hacky sack skills of Austin Matthews, getting his first goal of the season. Offensively, at least, Neil Pionk has certainly been the guy on the blue line that has been making it happen this year. And, it makes me laugh as to all the hot takes that came immediately after the Trouba trade.
Right here.
Because When you look at it now, Neil Pionk has been, you know, a massive part of this Jet blue line. And, of course, everyone waiting to see when Ville Heinola might get into the lineup and his bright future going forward. There will be a change on the defense. Nate Beaulieu is out, and he'll be out for a number of weeks after blocking a shot last night on his hand. So we'll get to that with Mike McIntyre coming up a little bit later on. But let me ask you this, and folks in the chat, if you watched the game last night, what was more impressive? Nikolaj Ehlers thread the needle pass to Kyle Connor for Connor's goal, or Mason Appleton crushing the net for the game winner last night, an absolute beauty. I can make an argument for both. Would like to hear what people think in the chat. What did you think, Remus? What was more impressive, the Ehlers pass or Mason Appleton taking it to the blue paint?
They both made you go, whoa, the Ehlers pass again. Just the way that he stopped and found Connor so quickly and it ended up in back of the net. I think I'm going to have to go with the Appleton. It was a big moment, a big goal. The guy's selling out his body. I mean, when you're falling into the corner after the goal, you know it must have been a nice one. The hard, you know, tight turn in front of Freddie Anderson to tuck it in. It was just a beautiful play. So I'm going to say Appleton, but nothing to take away from Nikolaj Ehlers. And I said yesterday, we did our cool bet picks. I said Ehlers to score. I like the pick. He didn't score, but he had 2 assists. So I'll take a push on that one. He had a great game. And just again on that Appleton goal, the Andrew Kopp little sauce pass before that was very good. So that was awesome. So let's see what the chat has to say about that.
Yes, exactly. And you know what? Just by the way, Mike just texted. Fire him that link again.
Yeah, I just got it.
He's just looking to get in. Well, the chat is saying they love Appleton. Ehlers pass. We got an Appleton. I was surprised that the Apple emoji. Can an emoji trend on Twitter because there was a lot of apples going out last night. I think the people right now are voting for Mason Appleton. And I will say this, allow me to give myself a little bit of the Barry Horowitz treatment here because last year I was adamant Mason Appleton needed a little bit more opportunity, a little bit more chance to get into the lineup and show what he can do other than spot minutes on the fourth line. And I'll tell you what, that is exactly what he's doing right now. And man, that combination he's got going with Adam Lowry and back with Andrew Kopp has been something else. It looks like we've got Mike. So we'll bring in Mike in just a second. But folks, by the way, while we get you mentioning Nikolaj Ehlers and Appleton in the chat, do us a favor, if you would, just hit that like button. Helps out big time for us as we try to get all this going. And before we bring in Mike, want to thank our sponsors, not AutoCorp, but Waverly and McGilvery. First group of guys on. Big thanks to Trevor Knott. Why not get into the vehicle of your dreams at a great price with the help of the Knott team? And if you're looking to maybe get out of a lease or move on from another car, they've got an incredible consignment program. They'll help you do that as well. Find out more. See the Knott team at Waverly and McGilvery. Or check them out online at not.ca. And Royal Sports, 750 Pembina Highway, 650 Raleigh. The Royal boys have been with us since day one of this ride, and we can't thank them enough. And, of course, hockey's back. Rinks are opening right now. Royal's your number one hockey superstore in town. And spring, it is feeling a little bit like spring right now. Bikes, soccer, baseball. We're going to get outside. We're going to get out of our homes. Get down to Royal Sports and get yourself suited up. All right. I think we've got Mike McIntyre ready to go. So, Areem, if you can, let's bring in the Winnipeg Jets beat reporter from the Winnipeg Free Press and get going with a little bit of Jets talk after the Jets go in and win 4-3 last night in Toronto, taking on the Maple Leafs in the first of three games. We've got Mike in yet?
Yeah, Mike's here, but... Here, Mike, unmute yourself.
Oh, yeah. We got to unmute Mike's mic. Can that work? Yeah, Mike, let's just get you unmuted. There we go.
There we go.
There it goes. Yeah, those thick fingers on the iPhone. It'll be good. Oh, geez. A live shot from the car right now, Mike. Great to see you. Mike, hey, listen, before we get to the Jets, and there's lots to unpack from last night's game, what was your first reaction when you heard Dave Naylor's report today about these talks between the CFL and the XFL? I guess the first thing I thought was desperate times call for desperate measures.
Yeah, absolutely, Huss. And I mean, if you're the CFL, really, can you afford at this point to be choosy, to be picky as to maybe who you're doing business with? They're coming off a lost season. We don't know what this upcoming season might look like financially and otherwise. So I think it's a smart move to at least broaden your horizons. I don't think anybody wants to see a repeat of the CFL, expanding its footprint into the U.S. in terms of teams and style of play or anything. You know, we've kind of been there, done that, bought the T-shirt. But if it does open up the doors for perhaps more partnerships, more marketing opportunity, maybe players, maybe playing in both leagues, right? A year-round kind of thing, if the XFL runs as opposed to at the same time as the CFL in competition with, if they can become a good business partner, obviously there's some big names, doesn't get much bigger than The Rock, CFL Dwayne Johnson. I think if you're the CFL, I'd like to hear more, of course, about what this might entail. But my first reaction, certainly surprise, this sort of came out of nowhere. But it does make some sense that a league like the CFL, which no doubt is hurting right now, would look to maybe see if they could take on some other ventures, some other business partners.
Well, no doubt, Mike. And I mean, just, we know where the Bombers were at. I mean, business-wise, they were on a nice upward trend. They win the Grey Cup in 2019, and I would probably argue the franchise, the flagship franchise right now in the Canadian right. Football League. And we know the challenges that they are in. If that's where the Bombers are at, what does that mean for the rest of the league? And, I mean, to me, and we'll get more details from Dave and in the days and weeks to come for what this means for football, here in Canada, the three down game, the rules, all that. But I think it's pretty clear that, you know, going down this route shows that these are very desperate times right now. And I think that, you know, Randy Ambrosi and everybody within the Canadian Football League is looking at every available option to survive through this and come out on the other side.
Yeah, the old expression, beggars can't be choosers, comes to mind. And the CFL, I mean, they literally were beggars last year, right? They were going up to Ottawa, you know, hat in hand, trying to get a handout so that they could potentially, you know, have a season. And we know that that didn't work out. And obviously the CFL didn't have last season. I don't think they can afford to have another lost season this year. There's good news certainly on the vaccine front. And the hope is that they're trending in the right direction to maybe have fans. But yeah, it's a really interesting opportunity. I'll say that future president, The Rock, maybe as CFL assistant commissioner or something. Lots of possibilities.
Yeah, well, as I said, we'll spend more time on this with Nails coming up at the bottom of the hour. But let's get to the game last night. You know, death taxes and Connor Hellebuyck being brilliant after a bad game. We saw that in spades last night. And, you know, listen, my takeaways from this game were the Leafs are a problem. I mean, this is a very, very good and very dangerous hockey team. But I think a lot of people are probably saying the same thing about the Winnipeg Jets for the way they made the most of their opportunities. And with the game on the line, let the guy that, you know, won the Vezina Trophy show why he did it. And, man, full marks to the Jets for getting that win against a tough team in a tough spot with a host team that had already lost two in a row that wasn't too pleased about making it.
Yeah, imagine how angry the Leafs are going to be tomorrow, because I think they sort of feel, Huss, like they've played three decent games in a row here and they've lost all three of them. And, you know, you look at some of the underlying numbers last night, the Jets should have got routed probably. I mean, 24-6, when you see high danger chances that are that lopsided, you know, you really suspect that that should be a rout for the team that had 24. But we know they only beat Connor Hellebuyck three times, and one of those was with the goalie pulled in the last couple minutes. Connor Hellebuyck is absolutely dialed in, and we know that after a loss, that is kind of his bread and butter. But I'd say, Huss, it goes to this whole Jets team, right? 7-0-1 now this year after a regulation loss. Like, that is some real resiliency. And they don't ask how, they just ask how many. Well, this Jets team has found a way, just as they found a way, and this is a remarkable stat as well in my eyes, that they're now 7-4 when they're trailing after the first period. Like, that just tells you that it doesn't matter necessarily how the first 20 minutes go. This is a Jets team that has a lot of confidence. They go about doing things maybe in an unconventional way. But with the high-end finishers they have on this team, and we saw that certainly with the Kyle Connor goal that put the Jets ahead for good last night, they don't need a lot of time and space to make things happen. And when you combine that with a Vezina Trophy winner, Annette, it makes the Jets a tough out.
Now, Mike, I asked the people that are with us in the chat. By the way, man, unbelievable. Thanks to everyone that's out there. We're well over 400 again right now live. The response has been amazing. What was better, the Oilers thread the needle pass or Mason Appleton's game-winning goal last night?
Well, I loved Mason Appleton's goal, and I've loved really everything about his play as of late and really this whole season, Andrew. I mean, I remarked on Twitter last night, and I absolutely feel this way, that watching Mason Appleton, the way he cut to the net, the way he protected the puck, and the way he scored, it reminded me of sort of vintage Blake Wheeler from, you know, a few seasons ago. Blake Wheeler doesn't really do that anymore. He doesn't necessarily have the motor, you know, now that he's getting up there in age. That's not the modern day Blake Wheeler. But there was a time, Jets fans no doubt remember, where Blake Wheeler kind of, you know, bum rushing the net like that, with reckless abandon coming down the wing and making life miserable for goalies. That was a regular event. And to see Mason Appleton do that, and that last wasn't the first time he's done that. He's now scored a couple times like that. He's created a lot of chaos. And I think that's a great sign. This is a very confident player. And it's created a good problem for the Winnipeg Jets, which I know you were sort of touching upon. with the upcoming expansion draft and the idea that they're going to lose a player, I suspect they now have to find a way to protect Mason Appleton, because the hockey world is noticing him, and that would go for the Seattle Kraken, I suspect, as well.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Hey, just quickly on Wheeler. A lot of talk about his start to the season. And, you know, if you look back at history, Blake Wheeler was never a guy that was, you know, a quintessential strong starter. I mean, there were times where it took a little while to get going, especially earlier on in his career. But a lot was made of it. We had the fiery defense of the captain from the head coach. And Wheeler, to his credit, said, listen, if I'm out there, assume that I'm 100%. But it was quite apparent, and you heard from a number of people, that this wasn't a captain at 100%. I've really been impressed with Wheeler over the course of the past, I mean, really the last 2-3 weeks, but I think you could probably go back a month. And I think that has been just, where are you at with the captain and how he's come back from obviously playing through some issues earlier on in this campaign?
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know if it was just a pride thing, Huss, or what it was, why he wouldn't sort of concede that he was injured. He didn't want to say anything, and you know, he clearly was not at full health. You could see just by the length of his shifts, like the fact that he was getting off the ice so quick, 25-second shifts. I suspect it might have been something rib related, that it was maybe impacting his breathing, and so he didn't really have the wind to really to have long shifts. He didn't have the explosive bursts of speed. And I think we've seen that return, right? Blake Wheeler looks a lot quicker. One thing about Blake Wheeler that you know is, I think it's going to be the last thing to go with him, is his hands. He's still an elite passer. And, you know, we've seen him make some real nice dishes, whether it's on the power play or more so now at 5-on-5, where he was really struggling to start the year. But for sure, I mean, playing on that line now, and I think Paul Stastny is a real nice compliment to Mark Scheifele. You've got, you know, two veteran guys in Wheeler and Stastny now with your number one center. And I think in some ways, maybe that takes some of the pressure off the line of Dubois, Ehlers, and Connor. And it also allows your third line to thrive with Lowry, Appleton, and Kopp. So I like the mix of the forward lines, but it does start with the captain. Having a healthy Blake Wheeler has been a real big difference maker for the Jets. And, you know, you look, he's still putting up the points, right? He's still almost a point a game player for the Winnipeg Jets, which is quite something.
No doubt about that. Now, Mike, we'll get back to the Leafs series and look ahead to game two in a minute. Neil Pionk, another strong game last night. It was great to see Josh Morrissey finally get rewarded. He'd sort of been a bit of a hard luck story so far this year. Before we talk about the Beaulieu injury, and what that means for the Jets going into game number two, just wanted to ask you about Pionk's season so far. We're getting to the midway point of the campaign. Where does Neil Pionk fit in amongst your Winnipeg Jets midway point through the season as team MVP?
Oh, he's for sure in the conversation. I think the conversation probably starts with Connor Hellebuyck, but he's making a strong case. I mean, I'll tell you one thing where he ranks, Huss. He ranks fourth in the NHL among defensemen in scoring right now. There are only three blue liners in the league that have more points than Neil Pionk. And who would have thought that, you know, when people were literally saying who, when the Jets traded Jacob Trouba, for an undrafted guy that I don't think many people in this market or other markets really had heard of, what a revelation he's been. Where would the Jets be without him? Without a doubt in my mind, he's been the Jets' best defenseman. You know, Josh Morrissey has had his early season struggles. I think Josh Morrissey had a real nice game yesterday, and it came at a good time with the Jets, you know, needing everybody to step up once Nathan Beaulieu went down. But for sure, Neil Pionk is a guy that has really held that back end. You know, along with Derek Forbert, I don't think anybody envisioned that would have been the Jets' number one pair this year, but it really is. It's the number one shutdown pair, and Neil Pionk is their number one offensive defenseman as well. And, carrying big minutes, big responsibility, just huge strides that he's made seasons, really. And, you know, I would argue that it's between him and Mason Appleton for my most improved Jet. But Neil Pionk had a really nice season last year. I almost hesitate to say that he's made another massive improvement, but it does feel like he really has. and Mason Appleton, who we just talked about, of course, already set career highs in goals, assists, and points. So, you know, for the Jets team that we knew was pretty deep at forward, having Neil Pionk kind of thrown into that mix has been a real big addition.
Mike McIntyre with us from the Winnipeg Free Press here on Winnipeg Sports Talk. We mentioned the blue line. There will be a change on the blue line. Nate Beaulieu's out for a number of weeks after blocking a shot last night in the hand. Who's coming in, do you think? Will it be Sammy Niku? Will it be Logan?
So I think Paul Maurice probably gave us a bit of a hint today, Huss, in that he said whoever, he didn't say who's coming in, but he said whoever it is probably going to ask to be kill some penalties. So to me, that's probably Logan Stanley, right? I don't think you're bringing Sammy Niku in to put him on the penalty kill. And you know, the other thing you're losing with Beaulieu, you're losing, not that he's a really big guy, but you're losing some physicality with Nathan Beaulieu. You know, Logan Stanley's not going to blow anybody's doors off with body checks or anything like that, but he is a physical presence, obviously, with his size. So I think it's probably Logan Stanley that would come off the taxi squad, which is an easy move to make. Beaulieu is going to go on injured reserve, so you clear up a roster spot. To me, that probably is the first move. But, I mean, Sammy Niku, who I didn't think showed well at all early in the season in his first three games, I thought he had a real nice showing of himself, though, in his most recent audition, if you will. And so I don't think Sammy Niku necessarily played his way out of this lineup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe we see them both at some point here over the next couple of weeks. Beaulieu, I tried to get Paul Maurice kind of narrow down when he says weeks. How many are we talking? He did reveal at the end of our chat today that it's probably more than one or two, but probably less than 4 to 6. So make of that what you will, 3, 4, I guess. In any event, the Jets are probably going to need both Stanley and Niku, and maybe even more than that at some point here.
Well, there's certainly a big opportunity for whoever gets into the lineup. And, you know, we knew as long as, you know, there was nobody getting hurt, they were probably, and they were winning games, they probably weren't going to change things up. But it was bound to happen at some point. And whether it's Stanley or Niku, be a big challenge going in against the Leafs on Thursday night. I imagine the host will be even in a more ornery.
It's
amazing. First time since Keefe took over the team in November of 19 that they'd lost 3 in a row in regulation.
It really speaks to their consistency as well. And, you know, they're a deep team. We knew that. You know, they look dangerous, especially on the power play. It would behoove the Jets not to give them a whole lot of looks on the power play here going forward, because they are absolutely deadly, number one power play in the league. And the Jets penalty kill, losing a guy like Nate Beaulieu, you know, who blocks a lot of shots, obviously adds some physical element. You know, you wonder what's that going to do to the penalty kill. I suspect a guy like Tucker Poolman plays a little more now on the kill, but yeah, I mean, for the Jets, a great win, right? I mean, no matter how they did it, the fact is they took 2 points against a Toronto team. And, you know, they got a chance to really do some damage here this week. 8 games left against the Leafs, 2 more this week. I mean, the Jets, this was starting to look like Toronto was just going to lap the field. If the Jets could have another, you know, couple good showings here, guys, there's the potential that the Jets could turn this into a 2-horse race for the number one spot here as we enter the second half of the season.
I'll tell you what, can't wait for the game tomorrow night, and can't wait to have you back on Winnipeg Sports Talk, Mike. Great to have you here for the first time. And by the way, you're looking great, my friend.
Thanks very much. All this fresh air and getting outside doing my daily walks has been a blessing for sure. And has to have you back. Winnipeg needs you. Winnipeg deserves you. And so glad that you've started this venture. All the support in the world, and love talking to you.
Well, hey, thanks, pal. We'll do it again very soon. Really appreciate it. There's Mike McIntyre. You can read the full recap of last night's action in the first of 3 between the Jets and the Maple Leafs at WinnipegFreePress.com and, of course, at the Winnipeg Free Press site. Now, folks, we are going to hopefully get Dave Naylor in here in just a couple minutes. And Nails, of course, broke the news that I think everyone is talking about today, that the CFL and the XFL have announced formal discussions. Now, what that means, I mean, some people will say that, you know, the end game for this is a merger between these two leagues. I mean, a league where you've got teams on both sides of the border marketing together, using the history of the Canadian Football League, the marketing power of the XFL, getting a, you know, a big TV deal. And I will say this, the potential in today's in 2021 or 2022 of doing this with the explosion of sports gambling and wagering in the United States is significant. Football is by far the number one betting sport in North America. The NFL ends and, you know, the Super Bowl is played. And then, you know, the XFL last year, you know, had really got off to a pretty good start. Now, you know, there was the law of diminishing returns. There was, you know, a loss of, you know, some of the viewership. But some of the teams were starting, particularly in St. Louis and in D.C., Seattle as well, starting to get, you know, a pretty good fan bases and get something going. And then, of course, they had to deep six the whole season when their timing was poor. They were playing right when COVID-19 started to really wreak havoc on our society. So you get The Rock in there involved, who's now the owner of the XFL. And I think there is a huge potential. I know a lot of people are concerned what that means for the rules, the Canadian nature of the game. But as I mentioned with Mike off the top, I mean, to me, this really does seem like in some ways it is. This is survival for the Canadian Football League. And as a football fan, I mean, best case scenario, the Canadian Football League is, you know, gets a 10th team and everyone's making money and the stands are full. But unfortunately, that isn't reality. And it hasn't been reality for a very long time. And then when you add in what this pandemic has done to the bottom line, the ability just to operate, it doesn't surprise me that the CFL is looking for other options to get going. And, you know, would it be a shame to not have three downs to change the field? It would. But that's nothing compared to losing the Canadian Football League. So as a football fan and someone that eats it all up, you know, I would prefer it not to go that way. But if that does happen, I think I would support it because I know that this is, I mean, going down this road was not choice number one, but it could be the salvation for the Canadian Football League. So we'll be looking forward to getting a Dave Naylor on that right away. We want to thank, we said not AutoCorp. We should think Boston Pizza City Place. And by the way, right now, this is a perfect time to do this while we get Dave in. For everybody that's watching on YouTube in the chat, if you could give us a like, that would be nice. And if you could toss your Twitter handle into the comment section. And our friends at Boston Pizza have a game day meal ready for you, a large pizza and some wings, the 24-pack, three orders in one. I think you can mix up the flavors. You can order those online, maybe get ready for some action tonight or, of course, tomorrow's game. But we will get you all hooked up, somebody from the chat. And I'll tell you what we'll also do is get a DQ cake from our friends at the Nikki DQ group, Nick Hajdiakow. He popped by today, actually, and we're set here at Winnipeg Sports Talk for the next little while. We are in a position where we're going to be able to give away some ice cream and quite a bit of it. So again, hit your Twitter feed, your Twitter handles into the chat, and we've got the game day pack from Boston Pizza. We'll get a DQ cake out from Nick and Nikki, and of course, support them. Pop by their stores, DQ Northgate, DQ Polo Park, the DQ out in Niverville, Manitoba. And they've just taken over the DQ on St. Anne's. It is not normally on right now. It's open right now, but now it is because Nick's taken over and they're getting after it. So we're going to change things up a little bit. Nails is busy. He's going to join us in about 20 minutes right now. So we're going to get Ryan Hart coming in from the Players' Championship, sort of switching it up. He, of course, out at TPC Sawgrass. And I mean, if you've been a longtime listener, you've heard Ryan join us in the past. I've known Ryan for a long time. He used to, you know, hustle beer here in town, then had a marketing company, got involved, you know, with sort of at first promoting and then running the Players Cup here in Winnipeg. And it was out at the Ridge, was a big part in growing that tournament. And of course, bring it back to the city with the move going back and forth between the Ridge and Niaqua. Of course, they've been to Southwood as well. It's just turned into a great event, but I think a lot of people took notice of Ryan. He ended up moving on to work for the PGA Tour, and he is now the tournament director for the Players' Championship, which, as far as the PGA Tour goes, is the biggest event of the year. You've got the four majors. Those are all, you know, run by you know, the USGA is the US Open, you know, Masters is done by Augusta National, the British Open and whatnot, PGA of America. The PGA Tour, this is the weekend, the famed TPC Sawgrass. So Ryan's going to join us in just a couple minutes for that. So great. We're getting a lot of your handles in there. So at the end of the show or later on, we'll announce who's winning our Boston Pizza game day pack, as well as the DQ cake. And I talked to Nick. Nick is all fired up. I think we might be able to crank out a Jets DQ cake maybe every game day going forward. So, and by the way, just while we get ready to bring Ryan on, you're all of you, if you're on the YouTube right now, you're probably already subscribed. Thank you for that. If you're checking out the podcast, you can watch the show, check out the feed, the comments, the feedback from everybody. So definitely get on that. And we've got our social media channels all going at Sports Talk Winnipeg, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and of course, right here on YouTube. Yeah, Darren Bauman giving a shout out. Great to have DB in the chat. Hedge is the man. Nikki is the woman. They are certainly great. And oh, we're seeing just a whole bunch of the beauties. Windog is here. Gitch Lishka's here. Goldeye's general manager himself. Andrew Collier's here right now. Oh, my buddy Isha Boy Bruce, D. David Lowe. Oh, man, great to see everybody hanging out with us here live on YouTube for Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily. All right, let's get to it. I think we've got Ryan Hart, the tournament director of the Players Championship, joining me from TPC Sawgrass. Ryan, it is so great to have you on the program. How are you doing? And what a difference a year makes. We had a conversation last year. You're all excited. I think the chain smokers are having a big party. You were teeing off on Thursday, and then it all stopped. What a crazy year it's been. How are things right now as you guys get back to business?
Hey, Hass, thanks for having me. And first and foremost, congrats on this new venture. It's so great to have you guys back on the airwaves and truly appreciate the continued support of golf and all sports in Winnipeg. But it has been a crazy year. I was just looking at my calendar, actually, and it was actually about 2 hours different from this call last year. And it has been a wild ride, but we've got fans back on site this year. And, you know, we're easing our way into competition starting tomorrow, and it's been great.
You know what, I just, you know, we'll focus on right now, but now that we are a year later, everything about that, I mean, I'll never forget the conversation we had, and I mean, you know me, a huge golf guy, we've been making our picks, and we're all ready to go for round number one, and then it really did seem like over the course of about 48 hours, the world changed. Certainly, I mean, golf of all of the professional sports, because of the nature of the game, I think had a bit of an advantage to get back out there. But from your perspective, just what's it like, you know, navigating all of these waters, and how excited are you and everybody involved with the tournament to get back to seeing the world's best do what they do tomorrow?
There's definitely a vibe here this week that's unbelievable, Hus. I think, you know, someone said, you know, we kind of felt incomplete last year. I mean, obviously the right things were done, but you listen to some of the players this week and, you know, to be back there, you know, I think when people came on site, there was, you know, it brought back a lot of memories from last year because there was definitely so much uncertainty, but the golf course is in unbelievable condition. Once the guys get out there inside the ropes and, you know, like I said, we've got 20% of our normal footprint out here and, you know, they're buzzing around today and it's just, it's truly an amazing feeling to see it. I mean, it looks different. It feels different. Everybody's got to wear a mask and, you know, lineups are, we've created a contactless experience through concessions and bars and things of that nature. The merchandise shop, all of our venues are open air this year. So it has a little bit of a different feel, but the golf course is showing better than it ever has. I've never heard the superintendent glow as much as he is. And the players backed it up yesterday. We had about 3 or 4 virtual sessions we were doing with players and sponsors. And to a T, they were all raving about the condition of the golf course, of course.
Well, that is great. From an operations perspective, from a guy that's got a list about a mile long of things that need to happen for a tournament, can you speak to just everything that's gone into making this possible to have even 20% of fans, at what went into planning for this event as opposed to any other event you'd done pre-pandemic?
Well, funny is, you know, I had the opportunity to be involved in the TaylorMade event, which is our first sort of live golf event back at Seminole back in May. And really a lot of the things that we tested with 50 people then we're using today. Just a much larger scale. Really, I mean, though, up until late fall, we didn't know if we were going to have fans back. So we were really running parallel paths. I mean, you were running, is it going to be 10%? Is it going to be 20%? Is it going to be zero? So I think the biggest challenge was, until we said go on a number, it was running the three scenarios all the way through. But, you know, the team down here is unbelievable. A lot of experience on this team and on the property. It's definitely a benefit, I'll say, of being at our global home with this event. So there's a ton of support. But I think the biggest challenge is the multiple scenarios. But we've been back live now since, you know, mid-June at Charles Schwab at Colonial. So the process that we go through, that the players go through, you know, they get tested before they're even allowed on site. They can't come on site until they get their results. And, you know, you're wristbanded at that point. And then there's sort of our version of the bubble, if you will, that's created. And, you know, it's odd to say, but it's normal life for them and for what they're doing. So it's been a I don't want to say a seamless experience, but since I go back to May at Seminole, we've just taken what we learned and continue to grow on it.
Players Championship Tournament Director Ryan Hart, Winnipeg native, joining us here on Winnipeg Sports Talk live from TPC Sawgrass. You mentioned getting kind of back to quote unquote normal. You know, all the players, I'm sure, have handled everything in different ways. I mean, I know you're seeing and, you know, talking to many of them this week heading in. How are the players, where's that level of excitement to get back to this signature event for the PGA Tour? And just the fact that there's even 20% fans there, how are they reacting to that? And what's the buzz around the golf course before tee off tomorrow morning?
Well, I think as we've seen them sort of slowly come back in the last few weeks, I mean, even watching the telecast at Arnold Palmer last week, you know, when Bryson hit that drive over the water on number six there, and you heard the fans, I mean, the guys are hyped about it. I mean, we did some virtual interviews yesterday because all of our press conferences are virtual, and, you know, they're just talking about the energy it brings. I mean, Justin Thomas talked about it specifically in his yesterday, where you get an energy from that environment. And I think as much as we only have 20% on site, the stadium featuring the 16th and the iconic 17th hole this year, it's going to be loud. I mean, things are going to bounce off the structures, and even though it is, that'll be significantly smaller than previous years to what we normally sort of cram into that area, but it will be louder than we think. And I think the guys are excited. Jordan Spieth was doing an interview with another outlet on the 17th tee this morning, and there was people, it was about, I think it was 7:30 this morning, and there was people wandering around and talking to Mike Tirico. He was like, look at this, I'm going to hit a shot that means nothing right now, and these people are going to cheer. Like, that's exciting for them. And it just creates a level of atmosphere and excitement that, you know, I think we're all missing in sport. You know, I mean, I'm as big of a hockey fan as anyone, and, you know, watching the games is awesome and so happy that it's back. But when we can get fans back into all of our arenas, I think, you know, we'll all see the arrow going in the right direction.
Well, it's funny you say it. I mean, I've kind of maintained for a long time that there's been a progression in pro sports as the money's gotten bigger over the last 20 years to, in some cases, not all, sometimes take the fans for granted. And I think the customers across the board, it doesn't matter what you're involved in, with what we've been through COVID-19, the value of what fans bring outside of just paying the money to buy the ticket has been seen in pretty much all of the sports. And man, it'll be great to see people back at Sawgrass seeing the world's best do what they do at one of the most famous courses on the planet. Ryan, there was an interesting announcement yesterday by the tournament, changing things up a little bit. Everyone saw what Bryson DeChambeau did last week in his win at the Arnold Palmer at Bay Hill, and the way that his new power has, you know, kind of changed golf courses. Tell us a little bit about the announcement yesterday about a new out of bounds area, and what goes into a decision like that. Who sort of makes that? And I mean, a lot of people are thinking this is a Bryson rule, but is there a bunch of other guys that are trying to take a new routes, shall we say, maybe away from the way course designers intended these golf courses to be played?
Yeah, there definitely was a buzz about it. I think that our the head of our rules committee was the first thing up on Golf Channel last night. So I wouldn't say that's something that we want to make practice of. But, you know, I think and timing is everything, too. You know, you look at what Bryson did last week, and as exciting as that was, you know, I think Rory was right behind him and actually in the fairway. So I think that there's some guys that are putting it out there. I think the biggest thing really that, you know, a lot of people don't realize is the idea on 18 is, for those of us that are either are here, you know it on TV, is obviously it's water all up the left-hand side, and then it's a slight dog leg to the left and a very narrow landing area on a very challenging finishing hole, par four. On the other side of the water is a very long par five. And the conversation of people hitting it into nine off the tee over the water and the idea of having a better approach shot into 18 is the idea has been around for a lot of years. To be honest, the junior players, Labor Day of last year, a young man actually did it both rounds and made par. In the junior players, he figured he liked the angle better, and he, you know, ripped his drive 300 plus over the water and hit his shot in. The challenge is when you have a tournament like this, you have players playing in that fairway, you have structures that are built that wouldn't be there in a, you know, the junior players, and, you know, are on a normal day here. So from the tournament standpoint, the rules committee standpoint, it's a health and safety issue. You know, you don't want to be hitting into oncoming traffic, if you will, on another hole. and the reverse side is it's a very, very fine line of where that ball would land as it crossed the water or the hazard and how, the proximity to the end of that hospitality structure. And, you know, the rules committee got together with leadership at the tour and basically decided from a health and safety perspective, it was not a chance that anyone was willing to take. And, you know, the integrity of the hole is to play it forward. And that is such even more so when you have competition going on and the structures built. So, you know, I think they talked to Bryson personally about it as much as they talked to anybody else about it, because there was a lot of clarity needed to know, because it was a last minute change. And, you know, everybody totally understands. I think you're going to see people trying to do different things as the game evolves. But in a scenario like this, I think all the players understood that, you know, it was the right thing to do from a health and safety perspective.
Ryan, great stuff. Hey, before we go, we got about a minute left. I wanted to ask you, I mean, a real sad day for Canadian golf fans yesterday. You know, obviously the RBC Canadian, you know, I don't think anyone's surprised. Our borders aren't open. I don't know how you can have an international event, you know, of that stature here. And maybe just quickly touch on that. But the good news for Canadian golf fans is the President's Cup is coming to Montreal. You're going to be involved.
Yeah, no, that you're right, Hus. As much as it may not have been a surprise, I think that, you know, it's still a reminder that there are a lot of challenges going on in the world we live in. You know, I'll be coming home shortly after this event, and I've got to quarantine like anybody else for 14 days. And, you know, to take an entire field of 144 players and to do that is a challenge. So I think that, you know what, as a Canadian, you want your National Open and an event that is loved by the player. You know, RBC is an unbelievable partner. Golf Canada has just continued to grow it. And unfortunately, just like I said, it's a reminder of where we are today. And I have no doubt it'll come back stronger than ever. But unfortunately, just not this year.
And we'll look forward to talking to you before a pretty big event in Montreal in a little while.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. I'll have 14 days that we can catch up in a few short weeks.
Yeah. I'll bring by a Boston pizza and a DQ cake for you while you have to sit down and wait to get freed. Ryan, thanks so much. Cannot wait for tee off tomorrow at the Players' Championship. It is one of the great events in the sport. Congratulations on everything you're doing, and thanks for joining us back here in your hometown on Winnipeg Sports Talk.
Thanks, Huston. Again, congrats to you and Remo to be back on air. Just love listening.
Appreciate it, pal. We'll talk to you soon. There is Ryan Hart, one of the real good guys from our sports community, and it's just been so cool. Anytime you see somebody from Winnipeg that gets, you know, an opportunity to really take his career to the next level, I certainly, you know, feel great about it. But I mean, for Ryan to make his rise through the ranks of the PGA Tour. You know, I think he did the Valero Texas Open a few years back, and then all of a sudden he's running the Players. And this is this is a huge gig for him, and the honor of being the executive director for the President's Cup, hosted in Canada, in Montreal, in a few years is going to be something something else. So I'm looking forward to talking about this tournament, give you a few updates as we get through the next couple days. Don't forget to get your DraftKings lineups and make any wagers. Speaking of wagers, well, we get Dave Naylor lined up to join us about this big news that he broke earlier today. Let's get to our lines of the day for coolbet.com. If you do like to throw the odd sprinkle on the odd game, do it at coolbet.com. I've been there for, well, geez, over 18 months. Love the odds, the most transparent sports book online. And you'll get a 100% bonus up to $200 on your first deposit by using the Winnipeg Sports Talk code of WST. So you'll be able to do that. Now, lines tonight, we've got five games in the National Hockey League. The game I'm most looking forward to outside of the Canadian division, where we spend most of our time paying attention, is this Vegas-Minnesota matchup. And, you know, back they played on Monday night. Minnesota came out on top. Vegas, a very slight favorite in this game, but this is just about a pick 'em. Knights minus 105. Minnesota minus 111. Couple games in the Canadian division. These are rematches of Monday night. The Ottawa Senators back at it. Big underdog against the Edmonton Oilers at plus 190. Oil laying minus 233 on the line. Arizona, big dog in Colorado, plus 179. Avalanche, 217. Kings, minus 125 on the road going up against the Anaheim Ducks. And the final game of the night, and I had to check this to make sure that this was right. The Montreal Canadiens are playing the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Habs favorite, minus 154. Canucks, plus 130. What is crazy, though, about this is that this game starts 8 p.m. in Vancouver. That's 10 o'clock here in Winnipeg. This is 11 o'clock in Montreal. Can you imagine being the poor post-game guy? You talk to Kevin O, see what he thinks about an 11 p.m. start. You know, finish the game around quarter to two, and then you're probably obligated to do another one-hour post-game show. Wonder what those calls would be like in Montreal at 2:30 in the morning. Well, we'll see. Anyways, all the lines up right now, coolbet.com, and we should get, actually, we do also have Breyer odds now for the evening draws. This afternoon, big one for our boy Jason Gunnlaugsson of Manitoba, who's been at the top of the standings all week long. He's going up against Northern Ontario's Brad Jacobs. And if you like Manitoba, by the way, big underdog, plus money, plus 123. Jacobs after that big win last night, minus 172. And the matchups this evening at the Tim Hortons Brier, Brad Gushue in Canada, massive favorite over Newfoundland and Labrador. Nova Scotia, a similarly large favorite against Nunavut. PEI going up against Matty Dunstone, a Winnipeg native who's skipping for Saskatchewan. And really the feature match tonight, Kevin Cooey, who is steamrolling his opponents right now, going up against John Epping. And, you know, Dunstone in the Saskatchewan rank had only one loss going into this morning's draw. But it did not go well for the Winnipeg native. They got pumped, I believe, the final was 9-2. So a little bit of a reality check for the young Saskatchewan team. Still just two losses, though, and they are in a very, very good spot. So coming up right now, by the way, you still have time. Get your Twitter handle into the chat if you're watching on YouTube, and we'll make sure to give out a Boston Pizza game day pack of a large pizza, 24 wings for you and the gang. And we'll also then get into, giving out a DQ cake or a two. Now, we've got Dave Naylor coming up in a minute. We'll see whether Remo wants to pop back in while we hope to get Dave on. Lots of things going on today, and I do understand how busy Dave is. Remo, this is a story that, I mean, the minute Dave tweeted out and broke it, that the CFL and XFL were getting into formal discussions and negotiations, I think there was a lot of alarm bells amongst lovers of three-down football. But I think if you look a little deeper into it, it speaks to, sort of a bleak economic climate for the Canadian Football League and how important it is to be innovative and do whatever it takes to see this league survive and get out on the other side.
Hus, for the CFL, this is strictly, a business decision. You know, you hope someone like The Rock can give the league more exposure. But again, they had to sit out a year. The teams are hurting financially. Partnering with an American team, I think, gives you a greater audience than just people here in Canada. We know that it appears to be, and people have tried to get the second U.S. league going for a while. We had the original XFL, and we had what was it, the AFL recently, or what was the other one that we bet on before? There's been so many.
Well, there was a lot of, you know, by the way, I mean, I don't know whether this is really applicable to the Winnipeg Sports Talk audience. We may need to do a separate pod, but you know that the KBO is getting going right now, the Korean Baseball Association, and and heck, I mean, baseball season is right around the corner as well. We'll be looking forward to do that. Yeah. But I mean, as far as the CFL, this is, in some ways, I think if you talk to a lot of people, Rod Peterson, someone I really respect, he's been talking about this for, you know, a decade or more, that, you know, at some point, the long-term viability of the CFL will be working in conjunction with, you know, whether it's the NFL as somewhat of a feeder league. You know, the concept of partnering up with something like the XFL is somewhat new because, of course, it was mothballed after a couple seasons and really only came back to get nuked by the pandemic. But I mean, the key character and in this entire conversation that I think changes the game for a lot of people in a lot of different ways is former Calgary Stampeder and WWE world champion The Rock, because Dwayne Johnson bought the XFL. And Michael, I mean, I don't know if you agree, but I'm thinking in 2021, in the world we live in with social media, fame, publicity, all of that, I don't know if there's a guy literally in North America better suited to help out something like the Canadian Football League than a guy like The Rock, who knows the league, who knows football, and has a vision to, you know, really raise the XFL to something of a prominent league in North America.
Yeah, I agree. The guy is a superstar. You know, he's in movies. He's got his TV show, Young Rock. He's, you know, massive on social media. He's posting pictures of himself doing acupuncture and cupping on his Instagram. So the exposure that guy could bring with one push of his finger on a tweet, I think is incredible. And I think, look, we don't know what's going to happen. This is just speculation on our end what could happen, but we know that they're communicating, they're collaborating, trying to explore how can they help each other to grow each other, because they've had two kicks at the XFL. It didn't work. I mean, last year was pandemic related, but everyone...
It was working. I will say this. Yeah. I think the rejigged XFL, the way they did it last year, was something that had a ton of potential. I mean, you know me, we were talking about it. It was still football to watch after football season was over, but before the CFL started. And I paid very close attention to some of the markets, and they were doing a good job of, you know, developing a fan base. And that's exactly what some of the teams in the Canadian Football League need to do. I mean, I'll tell you what, the Toronto Argonauts would have loved to have had the St. Louis Battlehawks support last year in the XFL. And I know that sounds crazy with all that history, but I mean, it's just a fact that, you know, there are some teams that have really been struggling, and maybe some sort of a new format, in addition to saving the league, which is first and foremost, might reposition it in some ways and give some of the struggling teams a chance to, you know, get out of the doldrums that they've been in. And I mean, for a team, I just think of it myself, taking away anything that I'm doing, you know, work-wise, as a Bomber fan and someone that loves football first and foremost, whether it's three down or four down football, if this is something that creates a much brighter future for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, I'm in for it, even if, and I don't really want to go there, but even if there are some significant changes to the way things look, it might simply have to happen.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, we've heard that their financial situation not great. So if you do need to partner to create an even bigger league, you know, maybe it can work. We'll wait and see. I'm curious what the rules would be. I think that's what everyone wants to know. Well, what's the rules? How are teams going to play each other? What's the stadiums? Because I don't think U.S. stadiums can have. They're not built to have the room for a CFL-sized field. So we'll wait and see. And I don't think you could do, like, it's not like when the American League and National League play each other and the National League has a DH. I don't think it's that easy, would be that easy for, you know, teams to switch back and forth between the rules. So, look, we're just speculating. I think it's fun. I think it's exciting. And I agree there's definitely a lot of gambling potential, as well as me and you know from playing, you know, betting on CFL and playing DraftKings.
How about this, Reem? So, okay, so it's one big league. Or I know Rod Peterson was saying we'll call it the Continental Football League, so we'll still kind of have CFL in it. XFL will play south of the border. CFL will play north of the border. the CFL will, if you win the CFL, you win the Grey Cup. Mm-hmm. The XFL can win the SmackDown Bowl or whatever Rock wants to call it.
Of course, yeah.
And then they'll play in the what will be the WrestleMania, if you will, of North American football. And like major leagues, I guess depending on maybe who the host team is, then that will decide whether it's four downs or three downs for the game and how big the field is in the championship.
That would be crazy, but it seems like they're doing regular season games. I'm just excited about now you got The Rock involved, if there's the SmackDown Bowl or like Know Your Role Boulevard Division, the, I don't know, Jabroni of the Week. Are we going to be getting into all that?
I'm in on that, man. We're getting some hilarious texts or comments, that's what they're called, in our YouTube chat here. The Captain Murray Rempel has said, bring back the Vegas Posse anthem singer. Yeah. maybe the low moment all time in the singing of O Canada back. Ezzie Ginsberg, and this is okay, I'm glad he brought this up, who will be the He Hate Me of the CFL / XFL? If one of the changes that they make to a CFL-XFL merger is that we can have nicknames on the back of jerseys, certainly this side of Winnipeg Sports Talk firmly all in on that. David Asplund says, The Rock is my old roommate's third or fourth cousin. Well, give him a buzz. See if you can get some info on what's going on here. Roger Quinnell, wasn't there a USFL at one time? Yes, of course. That was another thing that Donald Trump put his golden touch on, if you recall. It didn't end well. They did a big lawsuit, spent millions and millions of dollars, won the lawsuit, and was awarded $1, and that was the end of the league. The Godfather, Mitch Kasprick. The USFL was good and was star-studded. It was. Every other league has been garbage. All caps. Stay away. Well, Mitch, I don't like the way you're besmirching the XFL as an XFL guy over the year. But needless to say, I'm CFL first. But I just think that this sort of arrangement, you know, might be something that, you know, that really needs to happen. Let's join a league that can't survive. Well, but Split, they've got The Rock behind them. I think they've got ownership that is the envy, certainly, of what we've got in the Canadian Football League right now, a huge opportunity for more revenue in the United States. And the fact of the matter is, right now, I think the Canadian Football League is in a situation that that they need to consider things that before might have been an absolute non-starter. Dan Milburn, they could just play a half of each rules. That might be difficult. Oh, and Ezzie Ginsberg of Illegal Curve. Shout out to the IC boys. By the way, if you had missed it, they did not even miss a beat after the nuke to 1290. IllegalCurve.com. They're doing their show Saturday mornings as always. And got to give a hat tip to Dave Manuk of Illegal Curve, who covers the Moose and the Jets as well as anyone in the city. They're doing a great job. So yes, we will look forward to Ezzie calling Drew a jabroni, both on the show on Mondays as well as here. Gregory Lynn's here. Mike Wynn is here. Classic. And then Dan Milbert said, and this, I'm 100% on board with this. How fun would a road trip to Vegas or San Diego to watch the Big Boo play? I checked in on Rod earlier today, and there was a number of Rider fans saying that exact same thing. The other thing that I think could be a real positive for the CFL, and listen, part of the reason why I became a Chiefs fan 20, 25 years ago was going to Arrowhead Stadium and being a part of the tailgate, the atmosphere around the game. What a big event it was and just how much fun. I know that there's probably 10, 20,000 people that go out and tailgate for the games that don't end up going to it. So I got to give Wade Miller a lot of credit for the way they've sort of moved in that direction here in Winnipeg and made the game day experience, I think, much better. And to be honest, more fan friendly, giving more people those opportunities to do things that I think can make other fans. So, I mean, if that is a direction that we go to as well, I think we'll be in very, very good shape. But we've got to get to that point first. All right, the man of the day, can't thank him enough for joining us. He must be about as busy a guy there is right now in the TSN family. It's our pal Nails himself, Dave Naylor. Dave, we'll get a second. First off, it's great to talk to you again, and thanks so much for joining us back here in the Peg.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Hustler. Very happy for your new venture and great to be on the show. It was, obviously been following all the events of that have gone on in the last little while with your health and your career. And here you are right back in the saddle, man. So congratulations.
Well, I appreciate it. I couldn't have done it without the incredible support of the people here in Winnipeg. The response is just, frankly, blown Remus and I away. Awesome. And we're thankful for it. And it gives us the opportunity to do things like this, talking to you about breaking news with, a report that, it's earth-shattering in a lot of ways, because I think when you think about what this could mean, not necessarily will mean, almost everything is on the table. Tell us about finding out about this and what we know about the formal talks between the CFL and the XFL.
Well, the first thing I got to do is dig through my emails from a month ago, because somebody sent me a "Have you heard this?" kind of, anonymous tip on this from somebody. I couldn't get anything on it, and I don't know who it was that sent it to me, but I need to send. And I don't know if they knew anything or were just asking, in terms of learning about it, very recently there was some buzz going on in the CFL. Somebody reached out to me and said, "I hear there's an announcement coming," and we knew that it was not very well understood at the football operations level, like GMs, coaches, assistant GMs, that kind of thing. And whenever those kinds of announcements come out, they're usually related to a bigger picture business direction. And so but I didn't know this was coming until this morning. And I'm not shocked, I got to say. I have always wondered whether the Canadian Football League needed an equity partner to make this work. The XFL has obviously been tossed out. Hadn't done much legwork other than, a few inquiries on this kind of thing. So, but I agree with you. Like, I don't think we can get ahead of ourselves on this one, but we're going to speculate. Like, we have to. And just to be clear here, Hustler, this is not the two leagues deciding to talk. This is the two leagues deciding to formalize talks. They've been talking for months. So it's not like, hey, we don't know these guys and we're just telling everybody we're going to go over for coffee and break bread and see what sticks to the wall. No, no. They've done that. This is formal talks, and formal talks is like where you put the sandwich together, I believe.
Now, what's in it for the CFL, and what would be in it for the XFL? I mean, what are the two sides? What do they see in each other that might make some sort of partnership, however that works, mutually beneficial?
I think in the CFL, the league sees credibility. It sees history. It sees tradition. It sees stability, in terms of football. And it sees also some of the outreach that Randy Ambrosi has done through CFL 2.0, having the other federations and trying to turn this into more of a global game. The CFL, I think, sees tapping into U.S. television money, tapping into the capitalization of Redbird, which is the company that's behind Dwayne Johnson in this venture, looking at the CFL wanting to make this a global game, as we know. What are the two businesses Dwayne Johnson's been in? Wrestling and motion pictures. Those are global businesses. So the companies that he has behind him that have made him successful in those, reach everywhere. And I think they both know that the XFL, an 8-team league, the CFL, a 9-team league. One of the biggest things we hear, 9 teams, right? Playing all the same teams. So you could put it together, have a bigger league. I think the synergies are relatively obvious on the surface. Now, whether they turn into anything is, and there's some, certainly we're going to get to some questions, I'm sure, very quickly about, what anything that looks like a merger of these two would look like, because there's a couple of, rather obvious obstacles to that right now.
Yes. The rules, of course, are one of them. And, I think it was Rod or Darren. I was tuning into Rod Peterson's show earlier because I knew those guys would be all over it. They kind of were going on the air just as this sort of dropped. Mm-hmm. And I think it might have been Darren joking around that, you could have, the CFL play and then the XFL play, and you'd have the championship game. And like in baseball with the DH rule, just figure out where the game is played and play to that size field. I doubt that would be the case. But there's a lot of people, there's a big pushback. Well, this is going to be the loss of Canadian football. I mean, if they don't go to, if they move from three downs, if they go to a standard U.S. size field, that changes the Canadian entity, if that's a word, of the CFL. Just thought the fact that that's even being discussed, I think, speaks to the incredibly desperate business environment that, you know, the league is in right now, and all the teams are trying to at least be there on the other side when this is over.
Look, I like three down football. Okay. I love three down football. I love having one league that plays four down and one that has three. Okay. But a couple of things have occurred to me about over the last, you know, several years. One is the difference between three down football and four down football is smaller today than it's ever been. I mean, if we were having this conversation in 1983, I mean, NFL running backs are getting 36 carries a game. You know, the passing is a secondary part of the game. The rules are not, you know, adjusted for that. The NFL game today looks more like the CFL than we've ever seen. So, you know, we aren't talking about one league that's 3 yards in a cloud of dust and the other one that's wide open. The second thing is, one of the things that happened this year when the CFL wasn't playing is the league ran a lot of these Zoom calls with Canadians that are playing NCAA football. You know, not just the biggest names, but guys you might not know of, but they're at decent schools or mid-majors or whatever. And I started going on these calls and asking them about growing up watching football. None of these guys watched the CFL. like not one, you know. I shouldn't say that blankly, but most of them do not identify with three down football. And it made me thinking that if we're really trying in this forever quest to reach the next generation of fans, are we using the wrong game? Because kids learn the NFL at 6, 7 years old, and then somebody shows them the CFL, and the fact that it's a different game is not appealing to them. The 65-year-old fan loves that, but I'm not sure the 12-year-old fan does. So those are a couple of things that I've thought about. Again, all that said, I would rather have three down football. But part of the conversation here, and we will never know the extent of economic, you know, crisis the CFL is under, but at what price are you protecting your rules? Are you protecting your rules to have a 6-team league if three teams aren't going to play next year? Like, you have to be able to sell some vision to the owners of this league that shows that it's sustainable. And I'm not sure that if you came back at the end of this year and said, guys, we're just going to cut, and we're going to have a smaller league, and we're going to play three down football, and we're not going to be able to pay people what we used to, but we're going to protect our rules. Is that better than trying to find a business model that works and adapting your rules? And some things you could keep, right? The motion you could keep, the yard off the ball you could keep, bigger end zones you could keep. Could you keep the bigger field? Might be tough in some of the U.S. stadiums. It's not designed for that. And obviously, you're going to have to make a choice between three and four downs. But look, I'm a traditionalist on the three down game. I love it. If you could incorporate some elements of Canadian football into the game, but it was four downs, I could live with it.
Dave Naylor with us from TSN, who broke the news today on the formal discussions between the CFL and the XFL going forward. Dave, I don't know about you. I know a lot of people in our chat here, people that I've been talking around, we're wanting to get vaccines. We want to get back out. We want to get back to normal. And one of the biggest parts of that here in Winnipeg is getting back to IG Field, raising that damn banner that we waited so long for, and having a great time seeing the Bombers take the field again. What can you tell us about the 2021 CFL season? And do we take anything from what we've learned today as to what that might mean for 2021 here north of the border?
You know, I wondered about that this morning. I did a hit with Rod Smith where I said, like, I don't know. Like, if you came up with an announcement in 6 weeks that says we're launching a new league in April of 2022, why would the owners of this league want to play one more CFL season that's going to lose a ton of money? Or do you just pour all your resources and focus on 2022 and the new venture? I think from what I've seen comments from Bob Young, whose team, of course, is the host of the Grey Cup this year. I've seen comments from Commissioner Randy Ambrosi, both of them steadfast that the league's focus remains on 2021. John Huffnagel came out and said the same thing. So I think there is going to be a 2021 season. It might be a kind of weird 2021 season if they announce about the 1st of July that they're merging with the XFL in 2022. I guess it might be like one last go round here on you know, the 9-team three down league. I don't know, but I don't believe that I'm certainly everything by the based on the comments I've seen today, I don't believe that this venture, you know, jeopardizes the 2021 season, that these things are on parallel tracks. But it is an unusual dynamic because we've now really got two tracks to follow. You know, where are the conversations with the CFL and the XFL, and where are they going to arrive at? And, you know, when are we going to start the 2021 season? But it's, I mean, this absolutely affects everybody's thinking about the future, obviously.
Dave, another huge part of Canadian football and the identity of the CFL is Canadian players. And I realize this is so early, and I think, I mean, I'm basically asking you to speculate here, but the future of Canadian players in the CFL, a ratio rule, do you have any sense as to whether that would be maintained even on CFL teams? And of course, we saw before when the league went into the States, it was an unbalanced playing field. We all remember that Baltimore Stallions team, but just thoughts on the Canadian players' future in the CFL based on this announcement.
I cannot imagine a fully integrated league where there are 20 Canadians on every team and seven starters mandated. I know the league survived that for a couple of years in the last era. Of course, that was Canadian rules, which gave the Canadian players an advantage. Also, the fact that every U.S. team hired a former NFL or former USFL coach, except Baltimore, gave them an advantage. So they had an advantage on the sidelines and the advantage in the strategy of the game. I think that was going to become an issue very quickly had the U.S. expansion teams not folded at the end of the 95 season. And frankly, the economics improve for the owners if you don't have a ratio. That Canadian offensive lineman that you pay $225,000 to, you can replace for $75,000 with an American. You know, like that's the because of the laws of economics, supply and demand, Canadian players cost you more. So if you're looking to adjust your economics to be viable in a post-COVID universe, it's a lot easier to field a team with mostly Americans than it is with a ratio, just from an economic standpoint. I think that you could have a developmental element. You may have some spots on the roster for Canadians, but I couldn't see the full thing. And again, I'll just throw a bit of a counterintuitive thing, okay? The CFL ratio comes from an era before you and I were born, when Canadians could not realistically compete with Americans in football. If you did not have a ratio, you were not going to have Canadians on the field. Now, they still dwarf us in terms of numbers. But let's just talk about what's happening on the other side of the border right now. There's Canadians in the NFL. There's Canadians in college football. I mean, there's an SEC football game between Tennessee and Alabama this year that had two starting receivers, not just from Canada, from the same town. from the Brampton Minor Football Association, like an SEC showdown. So if Canadians can compete on that side of the border, why can't they compete on this side of the border? Well, the answer is they can. And I guess the question would be, in what numbers can they? Can they 20 per team? No. You know, can they in smaller numbers? I think legitimately so. I think to some degree, you could argue the ratio is a bit outdated in that sense. But I know there are people that love to see, you know, Canadians on the field, and it's a very important game, and they feel like it's important for the development of the sport. Look, if you like seeing Canadians on the field, I can't tell you that's not important to you, right? That's important to you. But here's the argument we're going to hear. Okay, Hustler. If you get rid of the ratio, grassroots football in this country will die. Kids will stop playing it because they have nothing to dream for. Okay. Let's destroy that myth right now. Ready? Where's the ratio in the NBA and the NCAA basketball? Doesn't exist.
Not one.
Not one. Where is it in baseball? Not one. Where is it in NCAA football? All these leagues where it doesn't exist, Canadians are aspiring to get to. And I'll go back to what I said earlier about all these Canadians in the NCAA. None of them. Now, I've never heard, ever heard an elite Canadian football player tell me he started playing the game because he knew there was a ratio in the CFL and he could get on one of those ratios. I have never heard that. Like, maybe there are guys, but when I'm talking to, you know, whether it's Chuba Hubbard or a Joe Ajoe or Josh Palmer or Ayman Ogbemiga, and I just named off like four of the most elite guys in college football right now, who some of them are upcoming to the NFL draft. None of those guys will tell you that the CFL and its ratio had anything to do with their football dreams. Now, if they don't make it in the NFL or college football, they'll gladly wrap their arms around the flag in the three down game and do like other players have done. But heck, Hustler, I've known guys who won most outstanding Canadian in this league who told me they never watched three down football until they played in the league.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's true. And it speaks to kind of the ups and downs of the CFL over the course of the last 30 years. I mean, even in my lifetime as a football fan, there's been some times where it seems like the CFL has had momentum. And then there's been other drastic times where it seems like they've been in real dire straits. Dave, I know how busy you are today. We can't thank you enough for coming on with us. Just one final question on the way out. I know you're going to be digging on this 24/7 for the foreseeable future. But what is next? What do we expect to hear? Will there be some sort of an announcement? Is there a time frame on maybe updating people? Do you know anything about just the process?
I was my colleague at TSN, Rod Smith, did an interview with the commissioner of the league about an hour ago. And when I was sending him questions to ask him, one of those I sent was, what do they envision for a timeline for these talks? You know, are we talking weeks, months, years? Like, what is it? I would imagine, because I think the XFL wants to play in 2022. By the way, the most tangible thing that's come out today is the XFL hitting pause on its 2022 season. Like, that tells you this is serious. Okay. So they've basically told all their partners, we've hit the pause button, because, you know, we may not be coming back to you with eight teams. We may be coming back to you with more than eight teams, I think, is what they're saying. So, I guess it's really, what's next is we wait to see what emerges from these talks. We wait for a news conference in July where the leagues announce that they're going to play separate leagues but have interlocking games, or they're going to have – there's a merger. There's – I don't know. But that's what I think is next.
Dave, you know, great to catch up with you anytime, but especially today. We really appreciate you jumping on Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily with us, and look forward to catching up with you very soon with more information on what really will boil down to the future of the Canadian Football League. It was great to catch up. Thanks so much for the time.
My pleasure, Hustler. Thanks for having me on. Congratulations on the show.
Hey, appreciate it, Dave. Appreciate it. There he is, our pal Nails, coming through today for the boys in the Peg. Great to get Dave on the program today. Well, it has been a wild one, and we've gone a little long. Let's bring it. We have to finish this all up. Remo's been doing a great job of kind of managing some schedules with some of our guests to pack it all in, but starting it off with Mike to talk Jets, then swapping Ryan, and of course getting Dave, and, you know, still working through how we're getting all these people on. But Remo, it's been a pretty wild hour plus talking about this CFL news, and of course a big win for the Jets last night.
Yeah, wow. You know, we talked about the Jets in the first half, spent a lot of time in the second half of the show getting to the CFL-XFL partnership, which could be very exciting. So yeah, we did have to juggle some guests, so we're learning a lot of new things about how this new show works. But if we do need to juggle guests, we can definitely do that. And it has been awesome to see everyone in chat. We've had about 400 people the entire time. So again, if you are in chat, thank you so much. Keep up the positive feedback. Make sure you're hitting that like button as well, and subscribe to the channel. We are here Monday to Friday at 1 p.m. Central Time.
Absolutely. You know, interesting. I'll shout out to Elvis Torres. Elvis is watching us today from Cleveland, Ohio, and said, totally would love to see the leagues merge. Bombers versus Defenders, let's go. Space Explorer says, adapt or die. And then Scott Budzinski, with the number of comments not very supportive of it, let the CFL die with some dignity. Steve Ross, CXFL is the future. It'll bring in new fans. Huge gambling component, I bet. And Mike Watson says, why would partnering with the league that's never crowned a champion be what saves a league that's crowned a champion over 100 times? Unfortunately, Mike, it sucks that we have to even consider that right now. But it's pretty clear that the business model of the CFL hasn't been working. And we're now in a situation that, you know, in the midst of a global pandemic, there's real questions as to how they can even afford to play this year. They couldn't last year. And coming out on the other side, what needs to change to actually keep football in our stadiums going forward. And it will be, it would be a shame to lose some of the Canadianity of this league. But I'll tell you what, I'll take that as opposed to empty stadiums and no CFL. And if they're going down this road, I have to think that this is not like their first choice. It's something that unfortunately needs to happen. Jack Bauer comes in. Lawless was right. Those are better glasses, Huss.
Yeah.
You know, in the chat, these, I don't have the other ones there. And I know a lot of people say they're Kurt Rambis, squash goggles. These are the reading glasses, I guess they're called. Now that I'm glasses guy, I should be able to call them the proper thing. I can't really wear these out elsewhere because, you know, everything looks funny. I've got the, I think they're called progressives, where they kind of go up and down. I don't know. I'm learning, much like we're learning how to put this damn show on the air for you every day, learning a lot about the glasses as well. But I feel free to give me shots about the eyewear. I'll mix them up back and forth and you all can be the judge.
You look a lot smarter.
In glasses. You know what? With this new change in careers moving to this, you know, I figured that, you know, we may wear hoodies and hats and just regularly be ourselves, but you know, you just got to put a pair of frames on and the intellectual level goes up two or three times.
Yeah, I was going to say your IQ percentage automatically increases like, 10% when you put those glasses on?
Folks, hey, if you haven't already, if you come in late, put your Twitter handle in the chat. We've got a Boston Pizza game night dinner giveaway, large pizza, 24 wings. And we'll also have a couple of DQ cakes from our friends over the Nick and Nikki DQ group. Speaking of that, Reem, we should give a happy birthday to your lovely wife. And I guess you probably have a thanks to Big Nick, as do I, because he popped by some of the goods just in time for you to be a birthday hero tonight for your wife.
Yeah, Nick was DMing me on Instagram yesterday. He was like begging me. He's like, I'll drop off anything you want. What do you want? I hear there's a birthday. And yeah, it's my wife's birthday today. So happy birthday to her. But Nick dropped off. We got some treats, a pizza, a dilly bar, fudge thing. He even dropped off like vegan ones that are non-dairy for those who like that. So I actually want to try those. I'm curious. So I think I'm actually stocked up, not just for my wife's birthday today, but for the entire summer. So
has little Evan developed the ice cream Jones yet?
I think
he hasn't already.
Yeah, I think we gave him some recently. He's 19 months old. I know we gave him a donut, and like we gave it to him. His eyes lit up. He's like, more, more. So I think we gave him a lick of ice cream last week. So maybe we'll try some tonight, and I'll record. He did. I got to say, he is maybe the youngest fan of Winnipeg Sports Talk. He says, Hustler and Daddy. And then when I'm not on the screen, he says, more Daddy. So...
Well, you know what? I love that. And I tell you what, when the picks dry up, we'll have to figure out a way to get Evan to make a pick for us on maybe the Cool Wet line sometime. But anyways, happy birthday to Leah. That is awesome. We'll tweet out our winners a little bit later on or announce them on the show tomorrow. But thanks to everyone who popped by. Can tell you, tomorrow's a big show. We're going to check in on what's happening with the Brier. Our good friend Ted Wyman is going to join the program. We'll get ready for game two, Jets-Leafs in this three-game series with the one and only Mr. Weeb's World himself, Ken Weeb. And on Friday, really looking forward to this, Jeff Hamilton was already scheduled to join us. We were going to get into, you know, obviously lots of Jets talk and maybe a look ahead to the Blue Bomber season. You know, Hammer's going to be all over the CFL story. So we'll have more on the future of the league and what's happening with Jeff Hamilton on Friday. And our old pal, Ryan Brandt, who Remo and I used to have very fun times joining in on a little three-man roundtable on the warm-up. We'll bring RB in. Congratulations to Ryan. He's going over to CJOB. Very talented young man. So we're looking forward to having him on the program before he gets back at it in the real world. Well, I think that's going to do it for us today because we want to get these podcasts loaded up so people get them in their inbox at 3 o'clock. Again, folks, if you're on YouTube, hit that like button. Make sure you get your Twitter feed in there so we've got you entered in the draw. And if you are thinking about listening later on the podcast, all our podcast links or on our social media tags at Sports Talk WPG, or you can just check the website at winnipegsports.com. Thanks again to our sponsors, the Nick and Nikki DQ Group, Not Auto Corp, Royal Sports, and Boston Pizza Winnipeg. For Michael Remus and our guests, Dave Naylor, Ryan Hart, and Mike McIntyre. That's going to do it for us, Remo, and great show again. And we'll look forward to talking to you again tomorrow at 1 p.m. with everyone in our packed chat on the YouTube channel.
Yeah, so pumped for tomorrow's show already. And again, if you're not, all of our social channels are in the description of this YouTube video. So follow us. We're on everything. And make sure you like this video and hit subscribe as well. Would be a huge help. And we do appreciate everyone who's been in chat today. We see all those messages from a lot of familiar names. So thank you so much, everyone.
You guys are great. And I will tell everyone, we're getting the great feedback. I mean, we're just three shows in. We're going to keep growing. I think the plan as we go forward at some point over the next little while is to add more content, potentially not even involving us, with some other talented people. So we're definitely looking to grow. I know you can't get enough right now, but we really appreciate the support, spreading the word, and everything you've done. So with that, for all of our guests, for Michael Remus, I'm Andrew Hustler Patterson. Thank you for tuning in to Winnipeg Sports Talk Daily. We'll see you back here tomorrow live on YouTube at 1 p.m. and in your podcast feeds by 3 o'clock. Thanks for the support. Tomorrow we get ready for Game 2, Jets-Leafs in Toronto. Have a great afternoon, everybody, and thanks for being with us.